Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 30, the Activities of the Prachetas, Text Number 7. Pinya, yeah. Or actually, it's Pina, Ayata, Ashta, Bhuja, Mandala, Lakshmiya, Madhya, Lakshmiya, Penasya Tashta Puja, Penaya Tashta Puja Mandala Madhya Lakshmiya. Svardashtriya Pari, Parivrita Vana Malayadhyā. Parhishma Tak Purusha Ahasutan Prapanam. Parjanyanada Rutaya Sagrina Valokya. Penaya Tashta Bhuja Mandala Madhya Lakshmiya. Spardashriya Parito Vanamalayadhyā. Vahishmatak Purusha Ahasutan Prapanan. Parjanyanara Rutaya Shrigan Shrigrina Valokya. Prajanyanada Rutaya Sagrina Valokaha. Pinaya Tashta Bhuja Mandala Madhya Lakshmiya. Svardashtriya Parivrito Vanamala Yadhya. Vahishmatak Purusha Ahasutan Prapanan. Parjanyanada Rutaya Sagrina Valokaha. Ladies. Pinaya Tashta Bhuja Mandala Madhya Lakshmiya. Svardashtriya Parito Vanamalayadhyā. Parahishmatak purusha aha sutan prapanan. Parajanya narutaya sagrinavalokaha. Pina. Stout. A little louder. Stout. Ayata. Long. That's the easy words. Ashta. Eight. Bhuja. Arms. Mandala. Encirclement. Madhya. In the midst of. Lakshmya. With the goddess of fortune. Sparadat. Contending. Striyaha. Whose beauty. Parivritaha. Encircled. Vanamalaya. By a flower garland. Adya. The original personality of Godhead. Vahishmataha. Of King Prachinnabarhi. Purusha. The Supreme Personality of Godhead. Aha, addressed, Sutan, the sons, Prapanan, surrendered, Parjanya, like a cloud, Nara, whose sound, Rutaya, by a voice, Sagrina, with mercy, Avalokaha, his glancing. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Around the neck of the Personality of Godhead hung a flower garland that reached to His knees. His eight stout and elongated arms were decorated with that garland, which challenged the beauty of the Goddess of Fortune. With a merciful glance and a voice like thunder, the Lord addressed the sons of King Prachinnabarhi Shat, who were very much surrendered unto him. Prabhupada, the word Adaya in this verse is very significant. The Supreme Personality of God has the origin even of Paramatma and Brahman. As confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 14:27, Brahmano hi pratishtaham. The Absolute Truth begins not with the impersonal Brahman, but with the original Personality of Godhead, Krishna. When Arjuna realized Krishna's greatness, he addressed him in this way. Param Brahma Param Dhamma Pavitram Paramam Bhavan Purusham Shasvatam Divyam Adi Devam Ajam Vibhum. You're the Supreme Brahman, the ultimate, the supreme abode and purifier, the Absolute Truth in the Eternal Divine Person. You are the Primal God, Transcendental and Original, and you are the Unborn and All-Pervading Beauty. The Bhagavad Gita 10:12. The Brahma Samhita also says, Anadir Adir Govinda Sarva Karna Karnam. The Supreme Lord is not caused by anything, Anadi, but He is the cause of all causes. The Vedanta Sutra says, Janmadyasya Yataha. The Absolute Truth is that from which everything emanates. The Absolute Truth is described as Adi Purusha. The Absolute Truth is therefore a person, not impersonal. Namo Vishnu Vraya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutai Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Tanamane Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharne Nirvishesha Srinivadi Paskatyade Satarne. In the Chatur Sloki verses, it is said, Aham Saravasya Prabhavo Matak Saravam Pravartate Iti Matva Vajante Mam Buddha Bhava Samanvita. That I am the source of all the material and the spiritual worlds. For me, the entire creation's flow. The wise who know this perfectly engage in my service and worship me with all their hearts. In other words, Krishna is Bhagavan, the source of everything material and spiritual. And since he's the source of everything, if we're persons, and our, then how can we say our source is not a person? Just like everyone here has a father and mother, or had a father and mother, and it's assumed that your father and mother also had a father and mother. And they also had a father and mother. It would be very unlikely to trace that back our ancestry and find out that our great-great-grandmother and father had no father and mother. They just appeared out of nothing. Or it's not very likely that one of our ancestors was a monkey either. Prabhupada said maybe Darwin, his ancestor, was a monkey. But everyone else's ancestors were also persons, because from persons we see, from men come, and from monkeys come. We don't find monkeys giving birth to men, although sometimes it appears that men are giving birth to monkeys in Kali Yuga. But generally it's not upwards. We don't find a progression that some mouse gives birth to a lamb. Nor do you find lambs giving birth to monkeys. Every species of life gives birth to whatever species of life they come from. So similarly, since we're persons, it should be assumed and understood that the original person, the original source of everything, is also a person. The difference is that he's the supreme person. That there's always the supreme, just like in the country, there's one supreme person. Similarly, amongst all living beings, there's also a supreme person, and that happens to be Krishna. Anadir, Adir, Govinda, Sarva, Karana, Karana. Such an easy thing to figure out, but just like I saw one movie, it was all about, they were interviewing all these prominent, the religious institutions and other people about who is God. And so these bishops and archbishops and priests and heads of churches, they were saying, oh, God is love, God is divine, God is the great unknown. Here is the head of a church, probably a billion people are following him. They're supposed to be godly. But they don't know who God is. They think God is the unknown. What's that? Sometimes they do that. But not always. They say Jesus is love. So you can love anything. Even they say Jesus is God, then they worship Jesus being God being tortured. Not a very good way of worshiping your supreme person. God is so incapable that in order to help you, he has to get nailed to a cross. In any case, there's not a very clear understanding of God in most societies. Even Hugh Hefner, the head of Playboy magazine, when he was asked, who is God? He replied, God is jazz. That's not a very good definition of God either. In any case, God is Bhagavan, Aishvaryasya, Samayagrasya, Viryasya, Yashashastriya, Jnana Vairagyaschaiva, Shana Bhagahi Tinganaha. that Krishna is the person who has unlimited beauty, unlimited wealth, unlimited fame, unlimited knowledge, unlimited strength, unlimited renunciation. So of course we can't conceive of someone who has such amount of beauty, because it doesn't make any sense to us. Everyone we see has some kind of limit on their beauty, or limit on their wealth or strength. So how can we imagine someone who has unlimited beauty? We can't imagine. It's not possible. Of course, someone who has unlimited knowledge, we can find out if his knowledge is unlimited by reading Bhagavad Gita. Because if Krishna has unlimited knowledge, everything he's saying in Bhagavad Gita must be perfect. Similarly, Prabhupada said that these literatures that we have, they're the most consistent and exacting and voluminous due to the unbreakable system of disciplic succession. So we have so many books, and generally speaking, unless there's some error in the book, they all consistently follow the same philosophy. And that whole philosophy is summarized in Bhagavad Gita. So it's not that someone can come along and say that Krishna, I don't agree with Krishna, or along the way they write their own book and it's not in harmony in some aspects with Bhagavad Gita. That means their knowledge is imperfect. You can't compete with perfect knowledge. If Krishna knows everything past, present, and future, that whatever he says must be accepted as perfect. And any deviation from that can't be perfect. There's not two realities, our reality and Krishna's reality. There's only one reality. It is a question of our understanding what that reality is and following it. The modern society where they take everything as impersonal, but they don't want to be treated impersonally. They treat everyone else as impersonal, but they don't want to be treated impersonally. Just like you can see that in the Western world, that if one person gets killed, if they're a European or American, it's a big story, something to be really unhappy about and saddened by. And if they kill 20 million people in some other country, well, it doesn't really count very much. They're not from Europe or America or Australia. Therefore, they're not really human beings, more or less. When they get killed, it's kind of like helping out society. They feel good about it. That's their contribution. But when Prabhupada was saying that, if an Indian feels some pain, it's not like he doesn't feel pain. Only a Westerner feels pain. That everyone feels pain equally. But due to the conditioning, especially since people are killing animals, that's also impersonal. It's such a contradiction. People are so maddened by the illusory energy in Kali Yuga that they have their dog, dirty creature. Maybe it's a little friendly towards human beings so it can get something to eat. But after all, just like in India, the dogs are not generally treated. Of course, now India is caught up, was catching up with the Western world. So they're also getting their dog and put it in their house and kissing the dog. Ooh, smoochy. The dog is licking its behind. And then you're going, kissing the dog, and the dog is licking you. Oh, how sweet. So in India, where they don't take such good care of the dog sometimes, especially in Vrindavan, you can see the dog sometimes, they go up to dead bodies and they lick the face. It's not out of love. It's trying to figure out whether the body is alive or not. And if the body's not alive, then they bite its nose off to begin with. So when Fifi licks your nose, you better respond. It may not be prema. So So if someone comes and kills Fifi, it's a big thing. Or hits Fifi, then they get arrested. But if they kill millions of cows, that's all right. Prabhupada said it's a custom. Even if they kill their own children, it's not a big thing. But to hit one dog in the street, especially in the Western world, is considered a major offense. Because they have no conception of what the soul is or what the value of life is, because generally speaking, we're covered by impersonalism. It's inconceivable how someone can think it's all right to kill your children in the womb, kill animals indiscriminately, and then your cat or dog you protect. But then sometimes people, in some cultures, they eat the cats and dogs. Just like one lady, she had this beautiful, what do they call those, poodles, French poodle. It was all nicely groomed, and she got just had a haircut, and it was white French poodle. And she was in Hong Kong, she went to a Chinese restaurant. So they said no dogs allowed in the restaurant. So she gave the dog to the person who was standing at the opening the door, and she pointed to the door, the dog, and said, "Please take care of the dog. I'm going to the restaurant. When I come back, give me back the dog." Unfortunately, the doorkeeper, the doorman, didn't understand English, and he took it in a different way. So she went in, had her meal. There was some extra preparation there. She didn't know what it was. She came out, and she asked for her dog. And the doorman put his hand on his stomach and said, So that was the extra preparation. So we may think, oh, how horrible that she ate her dog. But the sages of in India, when they heard that one black man who was beating on a cow and a bull, they couldn't believe it, that anyone would do something so abominable as to beat on a cow and a bull. But we think it's normal, it's ordinary. To kill the cow and the bull is more or less, it's part of our culture. There was a link in a newspaper. Devotee was asking on the GBC conference, why is it that there was such a reaction? How does Nepal get such a big reaction, this big earthquake that happened? And then just, I think, a few days before the earthquake happened, they had their annual celebration where they killed 250,000 buffalo. They slaughtered them, offered to some kind of goddess. Plus, they start the festival by killing a lamb, some birds, all kinds of animals as part of the festival. So you kill 250,000 buffalo and you expect everything's going to be, you know, daisy and rosy. You're wrong, because that's not the way God works. They want God to be impersonal, because if he's impersonal, he might get disturbed by what we're doing. If it's impersonal, it doesn't matter what we do, everything is all right. But that's not the way things work. And of course, if there's some big reaction, people don't think it's because we did something wrong. It's because they don't know what happened. Some seismic, you know, India's pushing on Nepal or something like that, the land. But there's no, what the cause behind everything is, that they have no idea. Because they don't believe that there's a God. They don't believe that they don't know about karma. They don't know any of these things. And they don't know that what they're suffering from are reactions to their past activities. And that when there's a big catastrophe, it's a big reaction for some big sinful activities. And therefore, it's not really lamentable in the sense that people are simply getting free from their sinful reactions. What is lamentable is that people don't recognize God, as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, pravritim cha, nivrittim cha, jana, navidur asura, Nasocham napichatara satyam teshu vidyate. The demoniac, because we don't use that word, the asuras, be politically correct, the asuras, they don't know what's to be done and what's not to be done. Neither cleanliness nor proper behavior nor truthfulness is found in them. They don't believe in the truth. They don't believe in God. They don't believe that everything is God's property. They don't believe in the law of karma. They don't believe in anything that's real. They have their own philosophies, their own way of looking at the world. The sun is just a bit ball of fire, just happened to be floating in the air. That we're all just kind of like, we popped out of the great void. They have their own way of looking at things. So it's all in truth. It's just mental concoction. Because they say it's science. They claim they're a scientist. But there's no, all they have is their theory. There's no experiment. There's no observation. But they already have the conclusion. So it's not science. It's all science fiction. It's all based upon untruthfulness. Therefore, Krishna says, asatyam apratishtam te jagadoharanishram aparashbram sambhutyam kemayatkam ahaitukam. They say that the whole world is unreal. It has no foundation. It has no God in control. It is produced of sex desire and has no cause other than lust. So they say like that, everything just an accident. The only thing that motivates anyone to do anything is lust. And therefore, whatever we do, being dictated by lust, anger, and greed, is just normal. Everything else is not possible. Anything else is impossible. But they say everything is by accident, but they never follow that philosophy. Because if everything was an accident, then why don't they stay at home and by accident they'll get their PhD degree? Why don't they stay at home by accident? They'll become rich. Why do they work so hard? If everything else is an accident, why don't they follow the philosophy and just wait for the accident to happen? But what they're doing, based upon their untruthfulness and based upon their material speculations, Krishna says, etam drishtim avashtabhya nashtatmano nabudaya pravanika karmana yugra karmana shaye jagato hita. Following such conclusions and laws to themselves, the demoniac, they create horrible, unbeneficial works meant to destroy the world. So by their very working, Prabhupada said, well, they're creating the atomic bomb and they're ready to drop it on everyone so they can get rid of them, so they can make more of them, use them up and get a new supply. But even their very sinful activities are causing adiatmika, adibodhika, adidaivika miseries for everyone. But it's considered completely normal. Yes, have a big sacrifice, kill 250 buffalo, no problem. The impersonal void will be very happy with it. Kill 15 million children in the womb, it's no problem. And they execute one person in, I forget where was that? In Indonesia, I think it was, for smuggling drugs, and it's written about in every Western newspaper how terrible. They can kill 50 million children, but kill one drug smuggler, it's like abominable. Kill hundreds of billions of animals every year, no problem. Hit one dog in the street, you get arrested. Therefore, they create horrible, unbeneficial works because they have no intelligence and loss to themselves. And they proclaim that you can do anything you want, just respect me. Anyone else doesn't count. The only one who counts in this world is me. So that's called impersonalism. And that's more or less how people are being trained in modern society. Just make money, spend it for your sense gratification, and don't worry about anything else. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions? Yes.
Krishna Maharaj, I would like to ask you, when Krishna wants us back much more than we want to go back from Godhead, and all those kind of things like these sacrifices, killing the children in the womb, I don't know how must be for him to see something like that. But in another way, he's the most renounced. So
for him, it's no problem since he's manifesting the whole thing. He doesn't like it, but it's his actually energy who's manifesting the whole thing. He sees it's just an illusion. It's like it is his dream. He feels sorry that all these souls are just diverting their attention from him and engaging it into the mode of ignorance where they just have to suffer. But that's part of the process. The more they suffer, the more perhaps they have an opportunity to inquire why they're suffering and make some progress. But Krishna is neutral. He says, nachamatani karmani nibandanti dharanjaya udasinadvarasi namasatateshu karmasu. That all this work cannot bind me, I'm ever detached, seated as though neutral. Maya dakshena prakriti suyate sacharacharam hetu nanena kuntia jagat vipari vartite. This material nature is working under my direction, producing all moving and non-moving things, and by its rule this manifestation is created and annihilated again and again. So Krishna is assigned, delegated, the task of manifesting the material energy and its activities to the material energy. And therefore he's seated as though neutral, simply giving the intelligence, the material nature, how to manifest different forms and carry on its activities. But it's simply up to the soul, who's eternal, to try, either he can stay in ignorance and suffer here, or he can go towards enlightenment and therefore revive his relation with Krishna. So Krishna is happy when he sees that some soul is making some effort to go back to him, and he doesn't feel good to see his children suffering, but Prabhupada Wright gives the example, just like a father, out of love for his son or his daughter, he gives the son or daughter to a cruel taskmaster or someone to chastise them in order to rectify them. He's not happy about it, but he knows it's for their good, for their benefit of his children, that they become punished in order to become rectified. So Krishna is like that. He doesn't want to give his children over to the illusory energy so they get chastised by the illusory energy. But because it's the desire of the children and there's no other way to rectify them, therefore that's what he does for their benefit. Just like, for instance, we may think, oh, it's so horrible that so many people got killed here and there, but everyone dies anyhow. It's not like, as Prabhupada said in that morning walk in 1974, when he said this whole world is meant to keep people, this modern civilization which is meant to keep people in darkness will soon come to an end with the next war. And the devotees were very concerned, well, that means that we might even die. But Prabhupada said, you die today, you die tomorrow, what's the big difference? Not that if I live for 20 more years and my life is successful. If I die today, it was a failure. No, we die today, we die tomorrow, we get another birth. So what's important is what we're doing before we leave this body, not how we're going to stay in this body. So if someone dies, and they, in some catastrophe or whatever, or old age, actually, it's good for people to die before they get old, because otherwise they'll get more sinful activities. Now, because of their sinful activities, they're going to go down and become a dog. And if they would have lived for a couple of years longer, they would have become a mosquito. So it's good that they ended their life earlier, so they had less sinful activities. It was like one time at the airport we met Colonel Sanders. You know Colonel Sanders? Kentucky Fried Chicken. You ever heard of Kentucky Fried Chicken? And America is very popular. They serve billions of chickens. It's practically all over the world except for Slovenia. They have that in Ukraine, Kentucky Fried Chicken. Yes, Slovenia is just a little bit behind. In any case, we met him, tried to sell him a book. Of course, he wouldn't take a book. He was senile. But if you looked at him, he looked exactly like a chicken. And he talked like a chicken. Because Krishna had already given him his next birth. He was going to take birth a billion times as a chicken. Might as well give him a head start. Obviously, he made some money killing chickens, but was it really worth it to become a chicken for a billion lifetimes? Especially they don't treat chickens very nicely nowadays. Yes?
You mentioned that there are some religions which worship the God, that they believe that the God is love, which will become, etc. Can I ask the question then, when they die, where do they, where do they go after the death?
They go to love. No, it depends upon what their activities actually are. You can dress as anything, and anyone can call you anything, but it really depends on what the activities are. Sometimes the head of their religion, their favorite dish is veal. A calf, killing calves. So, obviously, they may dress in a certain way, they may have a certain rituals, but they're not completely free from sinful reaction. Therefore, it's obviously their next birth may not be as auspicious as they hope it might be. All right, thank you very much. Grantharaj Shrimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Gaura Premanande.